Hey, what's up, Real Madrid fans? Welcome back to the podcast. Wow, yesterday was a day to remember for sure, despite that 0-0 draw that happened. Of course, we're talking about Clásico. It's been 90 years of the competition in the league, 30 years prior to 179 La Liga matches between the two of them, 72 wins each. And yesterday's draw means that both teams stayed just at 72 wins. Which, if you think about it, is really impressive. It just goes to show over the course of time, and ever since these two have been playing one another, they've been able to be dead even despite runs over maybe years and decades past. Who knows? I haven't been alive for 179 matches or 120 years, so I can't say for sure. Anyway, yesterday's 0-0 draw was quite interesting because it was the first time in 17 years that that happened, a 0-0 draw. The last time that happened, of course, was November of 2002. And yesterday's game was feisty as ever, as they always are. There's 8 yellow cards, and 5 of them were handed to Real Madrid, a team that was pretty aggressive, but the aggressiveness definitely helped them out. As always, my name is Mushtaq, the host of the podcast and a contributor. I'm joined by Hassan, who's all the way across the ocean in England, who's also another awesome, awesome contributor. And of course, on this podcast, Hassan, what's up, man?
Yeah, not too much, man. Surviving the English winter, it's now pretty much kicked in. So it goes dark here by about 2-3 p.m.
I'm sure that must be so difficult.
It's the darkness more so than anything, man. It's so demotivating. I'm just not a winter boy at all.
If anyone can kind of sense a bit of sarcasm in my voice and cadence, it's because I live in Toronto, in Canada. So his
they get snowstorms and shit like that.
So I just find Hassan being a little redundant right now, complaining about his winter, because it's like a joke. But in any case, let's go to the initial thoughts of the game. What did you think of yesterday's match?
I guess eventful is the one great word to use to describe that. Both on and off the pitch, of course. We had the protests outside the stadium, which were causing chaos. There were protests in the stadium, which caused a little bit of chaos briefly. The game itself was it was a bit of a slow burner to start with. So the first half was pretty much all Real Madrid. I don't think Barca did anything really of note in the first half, other than that one over the top ball to Jordi Alba. Other than that, I don't think they were really that threatening. And then the second half, it just sort of got very feisty and very scrappy again. As expected, but I expected it to be like that from the start, so I was kind of surprised it took that long for it to get like that. But yeah, eventful is definitely the term I would use to describe that game.
It's interesting that, you know, you said what you said about Jordi Alba, because that was like the one moment, I think, if there was one moment where Real Madrid's fans kind of hearts jumped out of their chest, it was that moment. And of course, the assist comes from Lionel Messi. I was quite surprised, though. I mean, I usually love who scored and how their algorithm kind of ranks the players and gives them their player ratings. But then I was also surprised to see that they gave Leo Messi an 8.1, which is the highest of the whole game. And
I'm a bit questionable on that.
It is a bit questionable on that, because I thought Real Madrid were the better team, and I'm not saying that because I wanted them to win. I'm saying that because I genuinely think they were, so I don't know how they ended up with that number. But again, just goes to show you that one moment that gave everybody a scare came from arguably one of the best players to ever play the game. So, I mean, credit to Messi, but for the most part, guys in the midfield really shut him down. So that was definitely nice to see. I missed the first chunk of the a fair bit of the first half. I mean, you kind of helped me fill me in there. But yeah, like you said, the first half just seemed to be more Real Madrid. The second half seemed to be kind of like iffy here and there. There was a brief, maybe 10-minute span or so where the game seemed to open up a little bit more. Barcelona got a couple more chances than it seemed that they were going to get. And I think at that point in time, all I was thinking was, oh no, did we high press too much? Or are we gassed? Do we need to make substitutions sooner rather than later? And I think Zidane, in a sense, did make the right substitutions. I was surprised by one of them, considering how well Federico was playing. But again,
yeah, that one took me aback a bit. I wasn't expecting to see Rodrigo on the pitch really either. I would have gone for Vinicius, to be honest. But either way.
Well, now that we're talking about the specific players and how they performed, what do you think went right for Real Madrid in this game?
The press was brilliant. You couldn't knock the press at all. Barcelona could literally not breathe, which is something you can't often say when teams visit the new camp.
Barcelona
forever been, you know, a strong side in that ground. Mm-hmm. I think the amount of games they've lost there in the last few years is so minimal. It's below 10. I know that for sure. It may even be below 8. The press was fantastic. Defense was solid. There wasn't very many moments where they really kind of made much of a threat. Midfield was brilliant. Casemiro showed exactly why he's so important. Whilst Valverde did, you know, a decent enough job against Valencia, you could still notice the absence of the Brazilian in that midfield. And when he was back in the squad for the Clásico, you could see his presence was so key.
Monster performance.
Yeah, absolute monstrous performance from him. The forward line wasn't too bad. Isco had some good moments, to be fair to him, in a game that I wasn't expecting him to start. When he did start, I was a bit shocked that he did, because I was like, he's been, for lack of a better word, rubbish for the last two games. Despite what some hecklers on Twitter may say.
Sorry, I'll let you finish.
I'm not naming names, but yeah, we know who I mean.
Seriously, like, I'll swallow my words. Like, I'm not afraid to say I was wrong. Like, I said it in the previous podcast. I said, I don't think he should start. I personally don't believe Zidane will play him until the early goings of the Copa del Rey. I think he may just sit him down and give him that time to kind of rethink his game, watch some tape, because he hasn't been that great in the past few games. Listen, like I said, I'll swallow my words. He came into this game yesterday. Was it the most masterful Isco performance? No. But was it more similar to those initial two games where he came back from injury, you know, namely against PSG? Hell yeah. I think it was a wicked performance.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
The kid, I'm proud of him, and I'll admit it. I was wrong. That's it.
Yeah, he put in a good shift. He got into the half space as well. He created a good couple of chances. He was pretty good. Can't really knock him. Bale had a bit of a strange first half. Seeing the moment, he wasn't quite in the flow of the game and didn't really show up that much. But he put in some good crosses here and there. And the only thing I would have knocked with Bale in the first half is he didn't track Jordi Alba enough. He did to a degree, but it wasn't enough. Benzema, he struggled to get into positions in the box. That's the main, because Barcelona just defended their box to a degree very well in open play. But his linker play, again, as always, was exquisite. His recycling of the ball was exquisite. His hold-up play was exquisite. Everything was sound, other than him obviously getting on the end of shots. But generally speaking, it was a very, very good first half performance from the team as a whole, really.
I think that's an interesting storyline, and like something I think you can assess in and of itself. You mentioned Gareth Bale not tracking Jordi Alba enough. Considering that most of the team did fall back and help, you know,
get the
ball very quickly, you know, when out of possession, it was surprising to see Gareth Bale not drop that deep as well. And I don't know if that came down to Zidane's game plan of, hey, don't worry about dropping back so much. We want you to stay a little bit higher so that when we win the ball back, there's a possibility that we can break through and we can put the ball forward very quickly and into your possession. But it didn't seem like, when you look at the amount of time spent in every third of the pitch, more so horizontally, so like how the team played going forward, the right flank was actually the fact that they spent the least amount of time in.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what the game plan was. Maybe he was just a bit tired and trying to save his legs so that he could play a little bit not longer in the game. I will say, though, there was one tackle that he made just going towards the Barcelona goal, like the goal line,
that was good.
Where he, like, at the last second, just, like, clawed walked his leg backwards and kept the ball in. I don't think Madrid ended up keeping the ball in that possession play, but I thought that was really neat. And then there was another play later on where he just went to ground, and I was like, oh no, not again. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, he kind of went through the walls yesterday. I mean, there was the headbang with, I can't remember if it was PK or Longley, and he was down for a while. There was another one where he took an elbow to the back. He was down for a while. Yeah, he took a bit of a beating in that game, but I think the problem in the first half was he was by the looks of it, what Zidane had told him to do was shadow Jordi Alba, same rate, be the outlet on the counter. And I think he kind of struggled to, because obviously how high up Jordi Alba goes, that would have been quite deep into the rail half. It would have been hard for him to track all the way back and then still get up again to be the counter outlet. So I think he struggled with that kind of workload initially. And where to position himself, but in the second, I'd say he definitely figured it out and found where the optimum position was for him to get on the ball. And there were a number of runs he made which weren't actually even noticed at times. So it was interesting to say the least. But yeah, I'd say he definitely stood up in a game again. His position was questioned because many wanted Vinicius and Rodrigo to start in this game over him. I did sort of battle for that as well, but he stepped up in a big game and he put a shift in. He was one of the better players on the pitch quite easily, and he did work himself into the ground quite literally. So you can't really knock him for that.
No, you can't. I think I also said I could see him starting this game, so I'm kind of glad he did. But again, also to your point where. He may not have dropped, you know, as deep and maybe sat up a little more waiting for the ball. Like, there's nothing wrong. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just interesting to see considering how crafty of a player Jordi Alba is. But again, Gareth Bale's 30 years old now. It's not like he's getting any younger. But you look at his stat sheet, not too bad. Like, two key passes, only, of course, Toni Kroos had more with three. A couple other players are also tied with two. He had one dribble, it's not too bad. Defensively, did he do anything? Yeah, two interceptions.
Three aerial jewels as well. He did pretty well.
Yeah, five crosses, two were accurate, 5 for 6 on long balls, pretty not too. Though deep into his own half, he would switch the ball quite frequently towards the left flank. That was one thing. I don't know if it's because it's a Clásico, I just paid so much more attention than I usually do. But I feel like Real Madrid played a lot more long balls horizontally across the pitch to switch the point of play a lot more. Maybe it's just me. But again, we've both talked about how Real Madrid seemed so dominant in that game and seemed to have the better possession of the ball. But it's one of those games that it just shows you, like, work rate and amount of effort can kind of trick your eyes. Because if you look at the stats again, 52-48%, it's quite even. But the fact that it's even in their favor just marginally, to me, it seemed odd. I mean, they had 604 to our 554 passes. Again, seemed quite odd. So, I don't know. Oh, here.
Yeah, it was odd.
Point. Madrid played 62 long balls in comparison to Barcelona's 41. So, there we go.
Yeah, they definitely did focus on that. You can see Casemiro did it quite a lot. Especially trying to find Bale. And there was one in particular in the second half where I was like, that's going to drop perfectly. And it just dropped a little too far. It's at those points you kind of wanted Kroos on those long balls being played. Over Casemiro doing it, as long as, I mean, I don't have an issue with Casemiro doing it, but he's obviously going to be not as accurate with it as Toni Kroos would be, who's obviously got that eye of the needle passing ability. But yeah, definitely, it was definitely something that I noticed. That, you know, Barca obviously sit high up and they have struggled with pace, which is why I was again confused as to why Vinicius didn't get any game time at all in that. I mean, I'm not. Not complain too much because obviously they still walked away with a draw, which, you know, isn't, you know, the worst result in the world. And actually, you know, you could easily argue they deserved more than that. But by and large, it was a good performance, just missing that last little bit.
Yeah, because Zidane's like what, the first manager to have five, like
He broke a record,
not
five games
lost.
unbeaten or something.
Yeah, five games unbeaten.
I think it's three wins and two draws. No, sorry, three draws and two wins or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Camp Nou's not an easy place to play. Like, I've been to the place not on a match day, and it's daunting. Like, it's scary. So, credit to him. Another
Well,
player that
that and Real have been there and they've been battered in recent years, like outside of Zidane's tenure. But there's been some really ugly scorelines at the new camp for Real Madrid, like genuinely hideous scorelines.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. I'm going back to sleep after this podcast. It's 6:30 in the morning.
Well,
I don't want to think about it because I'm going to have nightmares. So no, thank you. There's no need to go down that road. Another guy that I thought did super well, real quick. I feel like if there was one thing Isco could have had yesterday on breakouts, could you just imagine if he had speed though? Like if he really had legs?
it make him the complete player in that sense. Like if he had
Oh,
just a bit more pace.
there were so many instances where he'd be like 1v2 or 3 looking up the pitch, and I'm just like, if only you had a bit of pace on you just to be able to advance the ball forward and let other guys
Absolutely,
like Benzema or Gareth Bale come trailing behind. Like it just opens up the door for going towards goal, cutting back, dropping the ball, squaring the ball into the middle of the box. A guy like Toni Kroos coming up on it. I mean, Valverde yesterday, holy smokes, the kid just hit, I think, two or three volleys, and all of them
yeah,
were
he
pretty.
did, sure.
And you're
Yeah,
just
that
like,
first time one was, I think it bounced just past the post. I was like, God damn.
and I'm just thinking to myself, how much Toni Kroos video have you been watching, child? Like,
I think you could argue his technique is actually a bit sweeter than Cruz's by this point.
I saw somebody tweet that. I won't say who it is, but.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I think I made some of the tweet as well, but I'm pretty sure you could probably argue his technique is probably a little bit better because they just seem to go closer. I mean, Cruz often, when he does hit them, they usually go over more or less most of the time, whereas I feel Valverde normally only just bounces wide most of the time. I think once he's got it honed in, he could genuinely be scoring some screamers
I think so.
consistently as well.
And I think developing a long range shot, I think he also said it in an interview not too long ago. Like, has encouraged to shoot at the right moment, especially from long range. Because when those guys do shoot, it's oddly surprising for a goalkeeper. And by those guys, I'm referring to Valverde and Toni Kroos because they're guys who usually pass a lot more and are more focused on distribution of the ball. So them always playing with their head up because they're able to just have their head on a swivel in the middle of the park. They already know who's where. They're not necessarily looking right at the keeper to check his positioning. They've already scanned everything in front of them and behind them, so they know instantly where the keeper is. And I think that's how they're able to catch a keeper off guard so quickly. I mean, a volley is a little bit different. The goalie can obviously see that coming because it's in the midst of a play. But yeah, super interesting from him. Is it safe to say that yesterday's game is like a star is now born for Valverde?
Yeah, it was kind of the same for Vinicius last year, wasn't it? That was like, obviously we'd seen him
Felt
do it
like,
in games prior,
yeah.
but it was that Clasico where people really took note of just like, how good that kid was, and obviously he is. So yeah, I'd say it's definitely key for Valverde's development that obviously now people are sitting up and taking note like, yeah, okay, this guy's good. Yeah, I mean, he easily outshone De Jong yesterday, quite easily to outshone him, and showed all that he's good at, breaking lines, being a physical presence. The only thing he showed that he was a bit raw on was, that final pass in the final third occasionally, where he kind of either passed it straight back into a Barca player or played it over too much. So, yeah, he's definitely shown his hand, in the way of his incredible abilities, definitely. I'd imagine you probably agree with that as well.
Oh yeah, the kid was definitely sound. I was just gonna ask though, Twitter seemed to think that Valverde was possibly man of the match. Do you think so, or did you see
someone? I'd say you could easily argue it. I mean, there's three people I can think off the top of my head, so maybe even four, actually. So I'd say Varane deserves a shout, because I thought he was fantastic. Sure. I think that was his best game of the season, actually.
Machine.
Casemiro deserves a shout, because he was just unbelievable. Valverde deserves a shout. And I think Dani Carvajal as well, man. I thought he was really impressive.
That's nice to hear coming from you, because you're usually a guy who's a little more critical of him.
Yeah, because I think for the last couple of years, he's really been a shadow of himself in ability-wise. I mean, compare those these past 2 years to his season when Real won the double. Like, that's his absolute optimum performance, and that's what I expect from him. By and large, this season has been a lot better. He's, you know, obviously finally showing that end product to his again. I think he's got a few assists and a couple of goals this season, actually. So it's good to see him doing that again. So it was nice to see him once again in the big game shine, as he has done in recent games as well. I mean, I thought against PSG he was pretty good too. So yeah, it's nice to see him back at his best again, especially given, obviously, you know, you've got like the Hakimi and people like that returning pretty soon as well.
Oh gosh,
that's going to give him some serious competition, because Odriozola's not giving him that anytime soon.
Yeah, I think Odriozola's going to get the boot, but I'm happy my eyes haven't eluded me, because of the four players you mentioned just on long balls. Danny went 5 for 5, Varane went 2 for 4, Casemiro went 8 for 15, which is just over 50%. And then Valverde was 2 for 2. Sorry, I don't know if you mentioned Cruz, but he went 6 for 7. But again, just super interesting. Of the two defenders you mentioned, Danny had 2 tackles, 2 interceptions, a block shot. Varane had 2 tackles, a clearance, and a block shot. But holy smokes, that stat line for Varane doesn't really... it doesn't do justice, the kind of game he had. Like, it was just... Yesterday's game was just like a great, in a couple of ways, a great like glimpse into the future. Sorry, I don't know, the phrase was eluding me. It's a great glimpse into the future of like a little bit of Real Madrid, because you can clearly see Rafael Varane being future, you know, captain, just leading the back line kind of thing. And then, of course, Freddy being in the midfield, just bossing it like a machine. I put in to talk about performances from Gareth Bale and Isco, because they shocked us, but I guess they shocked us so much that we've already discussed it. While the game does have a lot of positives, of course, the result was on the fence. You would have preferred a win, no doubt. What do you think went wrong, or what do you think Real Madrid could have done to maybe get that goal? Because there were opportunities. Guys like Fetty took shots. I mean, Casemiro even took a couple of shots. One of them, Ter Stegen had to parry aside. So what do you think was missing, just the final bit?
It was just getting that final killer ball in the box, really. I mean, if you look at the shot maps, we had 7 shots outside the box in total. It may have been more than that. 8 shots in total outside the box, which isn't brilliant, if I'm honest. So it kind of made it hard to really break into that Barcelona area, because Piqué and Longley did such a good job of breaking down attacks and getting in the way. I mean, saying that, expected goals was under a goal. So again, that's another problem as well. It's 0.84 to Barcelona's 0.72, and our quality of chance was just slightly higher. But generally speaking, it was just a case of we just couldn't get in. I mean, the odd couple of shots we did have. So there was one from Benzema where he got his left foot on it after Isco did that sort of back heel nutmeg pass on Piqué. That was a particularly good highlight. I don't know if you saw that.
That's what I'm like thinking of it. I'm replaying it in my head. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, it was a very, very clean move.
He was fouled as well, so I don't know why there was
He was dragged down, so I suppose it wasn't a free kick. But yeah, Benzema kind of finally kind of got that space, and I don't think he just quite wrapped his foot around the shot enough. And then there was Bale's shot in the box where he rustled the side netting, which again, unlucky, but I think he probably should have done better. And obviously there was the disallowed goal as well. We did that goal disallowed, which, yeah, it was definitely offside by a very, very small margin, albeit, but it was definitely off. But the cross from Mendy was actually really good. There's a player actually we need to mention as well. Mendy actually had a semi-decent game.
Yeah.
By and large. Completed 4 dribbles off the top of my head, which I think was the highest of anybody in the team. He was solid defensively. Messi didn't really get around him very often. Neither did Roberto.
He put Messi on his ass at one point, which was so funny. Yeah. Like, there's GIFs and like videos all over Twitter of it. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. And then there's another point where Casemiro also kind of just dribbles right past Messi in Madrid's own defensive area.
Yeah, I saw the video highlight of that. And Messi just like walks off. He doesn't even jog. He just walks.
Yeah, he's just like, it's getting mad.
Just got done. I thought Fernand was very, very solid in that game, man. But yeah, so it was just back to the main point. Yeah, it was a struggle to just get a clean cut chance, and the few that we did get, we just weren't concise enough with them. But it was in the same breath, we also stopped Barca from getting the same chances. Other than the Alba one, I can't really think of many other clean cut chances they got either. It was just two very, very stern defenses.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Mendy had a stellar game. Like, it was wicked. And that cross, what was great about it is the fact that he was able to change direction and pace of the ball and just roll it across the face of goal for Gareth Bale. Like, he really made... He did all the work for Gareth Bale to be able to put that ball into the back of the net. Like, yes, albeit the game, the play ended up being offside, but if you just look at the play minus the offside, I mean, the control, the touch, the changing of the spin on the ball, like that, those are the things that are huge, because it's, I think that's definitely things that separate good players from great players. And he's clearly showing potential that he can be a great wing back, because a good player would just smash that ball across the face of goal and hope someone comes onto it. But you can clearly tell with the amount of weight that he put on that ball, he knew Gareth Bale was coming and he knew what he had.
Yeah, definitely, man. It was
definitely good from him. But it's like he had 10 crosses in that game, and had that one counted, he would have caught one accurate cross, because he didn't have any others that met the target.
Yeah, it's a shame, man. It is a real shame. Like, obviously, that would have done wonders for his confidence as well. But, I mean, hopefully he can continue doing that in future games when he gets the opportunities.
I feel like he definitely would. Karim Benzema, of course, also hitting a post. You and I talked about this on WhatsApp or whatever, however we communicate through like 4 different group chats and God knows how else. it seemed like there was a lack of service in the air yesterday. I mean, Ben's hit the post, but then outside of that, it didn't seem like Madrid played much of an aerial game, at least in the box. And I mean, with Ter Stegen there, I don't know if playing an aerial game is your best option anyway. Luka Jovic, should he have had any part in this game? Do you think that would have changed much?
I think so, yeah, man. Because it's like, they really struggled with crosses, Barca, yesterday. Really did struggle with them. There were a couple of corners where they played them in, and I was like it's, players met them. But, players' heads met them, but they just weren't able to guide them on targets. Like, to be fair, if they were able to play more crosses in, they'd probably pull off a decent result. And for some reason, I don't know who scored, and some players' names are in Arabic. Not sure why that's happened. What? Not all of them, but just randomly 6 players' names are in Arabic. I'm not sure why.
Read Arabic?
I don't even know why they've just got like that. I'll send you a photo. It's really weird. Literally on who scored, like, not all the players' names have gone in Arabic, but some of them have. I'm not sure why that's happened. Anyway,
how'd you send me the photo?
I'll send it to you on WhatsApp in a second. I'll send it to you. But yeah, Barca really struggled with crosses, man. Like, really struggled with them. I'm surprised that they didn't look to play more. I think in total they played 7 accurate crosses. In terms of actual attempted crosses, I mean, Mendy attempted 10 crosses in that game.
Yeah.
Which was the highest, followed by Carvalho with 7. But outside of that, it was 5 apiece for Kroos and Gareth Bale. So, yeah, Jovic maybe late on wouldn't have been a bad shout just to kind of knock, you know, maybe knock one in, because obviously his speciality is getting into those kind of areas and, you know, ghosting into the box behind defenders. So I reckon he probably would have been a good player to bring in for that.
Little robot that he is. Weird guy. But cool guy.
Yeah, like, I think I mentioned it. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I mentioned it to somebody where it's like, you got Bale and Militao doing the bottle flip thing on the bench last week, and then he's just sat there not even paying attention, not looking, just focused, but solely on the game, no expression on his face, and man's just a killer.
That is super weird. So the players whose names were written in Arabic are Thibaut Courtois, Danny Carvajal. What is this?
Ramos. Casemiro, Kroos, Isco,
Benzema,
Bale,
Luka Modric, Areola,
Jovic, and Nacho.
Nacho, yes.
The names are interesting in Arabic, I must admit.
Wait, you do know how to read Arabic, though, don't you?
Yeah, of course I do, but
the names are still... That's what I was like, why the heck did you just say it? But that's kind of weird.
I knew who they were, but I was just looking at the kid. They just look very, very different.
Yeah, that blanket looks super comfy, man.
Cheers, man.
Lucky guy. I didn't want to sit in my room because of Wi-Fi. I don't know what it is. Like, the house is kind of just like, our house is long. It's not massive. It's long. I mean, compared to England, it's probably massive. But, like, the Wi-Fi just isn't great at my room. So I came down to the kitchen. So I'm sitting at the island, but it's not nearly as comfortable as your blanket. But anyway, I think we've discussed a lot about the players. I don't think there's much else to discuss about them. We're taking a look at different players all over the pitch and their game. Some of them were really good. Some of them were great. Some of them surprised us. And I don't think there was anyone who really disappointed in this game. For the most part, it was pretty freaking solid. Like we said in the intro early on in this podcast, despite a 0-0 scoreline, there were some... Real Madrid decided to do something I can't remember them ever doing. And that's not to say I've been a fan since 1902. I haven't, because my parents weren't even... Which should be insane. Nonetheless, if you don't know what we're talking about, after the game, and I mean right after the game, like very, very close to right after the game, Real Madrid actually put up a post on their official website. Now, this post is titled, "Neither Referee Nor VAR System Saw Two Penalties on Varane." Of course, you can go see this post yourself. Just go into Google, search up Real Madrid, and just check out, I believe it's the news section. But for those of you who are too lazy to do it, I will do it for you, and I'll read it to you verbatim. This is exactly what it says. I'm not adding or subtracting anything from it. So the subtitle is, "The French was stood on long late and 2 minutes later had his shirt pulled by Ivan Rakitic. The body Rafael Varane was involved in two controversial moments in El Clasico at the Camp Nou. The Frenchman could have had two penalties in the first half, but Hernandez, who's the referee, did not give either of them. By the way, Real Madrid, if you need a copy editor or someone for your communications team, definitely hire me, because this person's made a mistake and I won't be making those mistakes. So feel free. My start date is ASAP. Don't worry about salary and accommodation. We can sort that out later. It's fine. Continuing on, though.
Turf in the Bernabeu.
On minute 17, the Madridista went to head a corner before Longley stood on his thigh muscle in the area, but neither the referee nor VAR, where Burgos Bengoetxea.
Maybe one about it. That's a nightmare to pronounce, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm not going to try. Was in charge, deemed it a penalty. 2 minutes later, and following another corner, the central defender had his shirt pulled by Ivan Rakitic, which saw him end up on the ground in the penalty area. However, once again, neither the referee or the VAR system decided to award the penalty. If you don't know what photo this little snippet is referring to here by Real Madrid, it is circulating all over Twitter. It's on us. It's on everything. Marca, Dario Sport, whatever. I'll try and get that on the Real Champs Twitter as well. So follow the Real Champs for a whole bunch of post-match content. I know Hassan did a really cool three takeaways, as he always does. So follow the Real Champs Twitter, at the Real Champs FS. And follow Hassan himself, even though he's a bit of a loser, at the Hassan. Because I won't lie, though, you have some really good tweets over the course of the game. And it definitely, it's tweets that if you are trying to learn and get a better perspective of the game and more, and like an understanding of how teams are playing and strengths and weaknesses, Hassan definitely has some good tweets over the course of the 90 minutes to help you understand that. So definitely go give both those accounts a follow. Nonetheless, let's go back to the point here. This is a very, very unusual move from Real Madrid. Some people, I don't know why I said it like that.
Very strange accent. What was that?
I don't
really deep South American.
I feel like I have a really weird accent in that my accent isn't really Canadian because here's the problem. One, I travel. I'm not saying I'm a globetrotter or anything, but one is I travel, and when I travel, I typically spend like a week or two in different areas. So I feel like I pick up on like small little things from wherever I am. Then there's another issue, which is I have friends who live in different parts of the world. So I have friends who live in different areas of America. And America in and of itself has like God knows how many different accents. So when I speak to them, I feel like I pick up on things. Then as of late, and I'm super impressed with the both of us, I've been speaking to you two or three times a week, so I feel like that also adds to it. On top
You're
of that,
becoming more British.
Yeah, exactly. On top of that, which I don't mind, only because it kind of, you know, accents don't really happen because you think of it unless you're forcing it, and that's kind of weird. But it also helps enunciate your words more, because you guys definitely do enunciate your words more. But there are some words that you eat up, which kind of annoy me, but whatever. And then I also have family who live in England who I speak to occasionally as well. So I think that's why my accent's like really weird. Anyway, let's go back to the story. On social media, there was tons of people who were critical of Real Madrid and their decision to go and post this on their website. Now, whether the Spanish Federation sees this as an egregious attack on the referees and the league as a whole and decide. Yet, I mean, I just woke up an hour ago, so hell, I would not be able to tell you if anything has just yet. Maybe Hassan will. But what do you make of the statement? Like, one, was Real Madrid right or wrong to do it? And two, what the hell do you think was their point of doing it, really? I mean, they made an error in it, so it kind of takes away a lot of the sting of the punch, so to speak. Really pissed me off. What is either? Wither's a word, but it's either. Come on.
Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest. It's a weird one because, I mean, last week I had Barca fans crying, literally crying after like that thing with Pique, even though Pique had a hold of the other guy's jersey anyway. So it's like it's ironic now that people are criticizing Madrid for doing it, even though Barca did it literally only last week for an incident far less significant, really. It should have been looked at. And the fact that it was ignored is absolutely shocking because it's not like he's got a little bit of his jersey. He could practically rip it off if he wanted to, if you look at it. Like it's quite a strong pull. And then the boot to the thigh, how was that ignored? I don't understand how that was ignored. So I think it's a good move from Real. I don't think it's a bad move from Real at all. So yeah, people need to like chill out with the criticism of it, because in the day, if their team did it, they'd be up in arms with the team about it as well. It's all about just that sort of, well, if someone else's team does it, I'm going to criticize it. If my team does it, it's all good. So yeah, that's how I view it.
The only thing that geeks me about the situation, so first of all, I'm not mad that Real Madrid did this. Like, I don't think they made any accusations or they put the verbiage that was used in the statement was really smart, because there's no lying, there's no reaching in this. They're just stating facts. This was the guy who coached the game. This was the guy who was in charge of VAR. And for some reason, it seemed that they missed both these calls. I don't think there was any language in there that suggests that it was rude or disrespectful. I mean, obviously, they're trying to clap back, which you can understand. I think this is just like, it just puts a bad taste in everyone's mouth who is against VAR as it is. So it's like, to your point that you've already made, like, what's the point of having VAR if you're not going to use it effectively? Like, you haven't, like, there's two, like, clear, blatant plays where something should have been called back or something should have been done about it. But it's like, what are you doing in the VAR room? Was it last season there was a La Liga match and no one was in the VAR room? I think it was, like, a Barcelona game, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Like, they took a Yeah.
It was, I'm talking about, like, it's a shot of the VAR and there's no one in there during the game.
Yeah, wasn't that last season, I think, against Betis?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I know exactly which way you're on about, though, and it was really funny. I mean, as annoying as it was, it was funny. So funny.
Like, what are they doing? Going on a freaking lunch break? Like,
the guy in the VAR room in this game just gone was the same guy that sent Ronaldo off for the shove incident at the Supercopa de España.
Really? Damn.
Yeah, same guy.
Anyway, tons of drama. Let us know what you think about that incident, and let us know what you think about VAR as a whole. So, again, give us a follow on Twitter at TheRealChampsFS and Hassan's Twitter as well. Before we wrap up, though, some interesting things to kind of just take a look as we take a look ahead. Yesterday's game, of course, Eden Hazard was absent. There's no way he could have played. He's injured. I mean, the severity is here and there. When he'll come back, probably in the new year. Hopefully, his recovery is going well. But how crazy is it to think that Real Madrid had the game that they did yesterday, the performance that they did? But Eden Hazard played no part of it.
I think he would have been... I did tweet this out as well. If they had Eden Hazard in that game, that would have been a very different game, because you would have seen an elite line breaker. I mean, not to say that we haven't got line breakers, we do, because you've got Valverde, who's good at it, and Isco is also good at it. But Hazard's just a level above those guys in that ability to break between lines and make crucial game-changing moments happen. So if he'd been available in that game, I don't see any reason why they couldn't have generated two, maybe even three solid goal-scoring chances. I think that's just how much of a difference he can make. So the amount of space between their midfield and their back line, and the amount of space in between their fullbacks is just unbelievable. And that kind of space for somebody like Hazard is just it's heaven for him. So, yeah, he could really have turned that game on its head. And it's a damn shame that we couldn't get him in there. So you might want to censor this bit, but fuck Thomas Mounier.
Well, next one is going to be really good, because that Clásico is taking place at the Bernabeu. Historically, at least over the last 5 years, not the best results in Clásicos at the Bernabeu. But not only from an individual point of view of Hazard's ability to break through lines, but we did talk about Ferland Mendy and the great game he had. And you could only think, if he had that support, and if Eden Hazard had that kind of support from a guy like him, who can put in that work and kind of lighten the load for Eden Hazard, in the sense that he doesn't need to do as much to get up the pitch and carry the ball forward, because you have a guy who's on the same flank as you, who is Ferland Mendy. The kid's super young, and he's just got legs for days. I think him and Federico Valverde are probably are the two players on Real Madrid with the most insane stamina when it comes to just running up and down the pitch, back and forth. And yeah, that definitely has to do with the fact that they're like 21 years old or whatever, but super, super cool. If Eden Hazard had been in this game, I think there would have been a goal for sure. Service for Karim Benzema would have been on another level. And that trio up top, like you already said, I think it would have been like just that dagger that Real Madrid missed over the game. So now, because there is a draw, these teams are tied 37 points each. I believe it's 37 points. Yes.
Yeah, 37 points each.
Of course, the only thing that separates them is goal difference. So now Barcelona has scored 43 goals and Real Madrid has scored 33 goals. Now, I know that's not goal difference, but of course, you need to subtract two numbers to get goal difference. And the more higher the first number is, the better it is for you. With 10 less goals over the same course, over the same period of time, do you think that maybe this competition or this league title could just come down to goal difference? And does that mean that Real Madrid need to start beating up on lesser sides the way that Barcelona has? Because I think Real Madrid's highest scoreline this season in the league is a 5-0 or 5-1 win. And that was several weeks ago. Whereas Barcelona, I believe, had like an 8-0 or 8-1 win. I mean, 3 goals may not seem like the biggest of differences, but when you start adding that up over the course of the season, like you do right now, that amounts to 10 goals, which is huge.
They definitely do need to start doing that. But the only other thing you need to consider is Real have already played a lot of these tricky sides away from home already. So obviously already been to the Camp Nou, already been to the Wanda Metropolitano, already been to Sevilla's ground, which I always seem to forget the name of. Is it the Ramos Sanchez Pizjuan or something like that? I can't remember.
Pronunciation. Remember the last podcast I told you when you screw up?
I literally can't remember. I literally cannot remember.
You messed it up. Don't ever come at me for my pronunciation again. Anyway, carry on.
Obviously, they've already been to Ceramica, which is huge. That's always a tricky ground to go to because Villarreal always seems to score a lot there. There's another one as well, which is Valencia. They've already been to Mestalla as well. So that's 5 tough grounds. And Vigo as well. They've already been to Celta Vigo away. So that's 6 grounds already cleared away from home that they've been to and got results there. I'm pretty sure I saw like a breakdown of just how well they performed there as well. I think at this point last season when they played those grounds, they'd already faced some like 6 out of 7 defeats or something like that. So to have gone there and got no losses at all in any of them is absolutely massive. But the performance in the Nou Camp as well, I think is starting to signal maybe a shift in the balance of power, because obviously, and I know most fans may want to try and deny it, but this last decade and a bit has largely, at least on a domestic front, belonged to Barcelona. I mean, they've had the lion's share of the league titles. They've had the lion's share of the Clásicos, both home and away, generally speaking. So it's kind of nice to finally, because if you think about it, how many times have there been performances where Real have gone and actually just outplay Barcelona at home? It doesn't happen often. Hasn't happened often in the past decade, particularly. I think it's starting to show a change in that kind of in that tie. Because if you look at a Barcelona squad, a lot of those very important players are now aging. Suarez is over 30, Messi over 30, Rakitic is over 30, Busquets is over 30, Pique is over 30.
Today's game. Do you know how surprised I was to pull up to work at my internship, turn on the TV, and the first shot I see is Busquets sitting on the bench? That's scary.
Yeah, insane. But even he's been showing those kind of shades of father time catching up to him this season. I mean, it was very present against Real Sociedad last week. Like, he struggled badly. So, you know, you're seeing all these kind of stars who have troubled Real for the better part of the last decade and some. You know, approaching that kind of point where the hilltop is now a decline. Whereas you look at Real Madrid and how many of their main core is really that old. Yeah, okay, Ramos is over 30, as is Marcelo, and as is Karim Benzema, but Kroos is still under 30, Casemiro is still under 30, Isco is still under 30, Carvalho is still under 30, Varane is still under 30, Courtois is under 30, and then they've still got all those young talents to come through. You know, Martin Odegaard, Achraf Hakimi, Vinicius and Rodrigo. Luka Jovic is still extremely young. Fede Valverde is incredibly young. Ferland Mendy is incredibly young. Like, there's a ridiculously strong team forming there, and they're all so young and far from their primes. So you're now potentially looking at, you know, a generation coming through, and Barcelona's next step isn't really as or anywhere near as bright as that. You know, okay, yeah, Frankie de Jong looks like he will be a world-class talent, but outside of him in midfield, who do they really have? Ansu Fati's another one, yeah. He's, but again, in that attack, how many like absolute stalwarts they have that are, you know, under 27 that really stick out? Ousmane Dembele's been nothing short of a flop since joining. Looks like he probably will leave. Felipe Coutinho isn't going to come back. They sold Malcolm. They don't have a striker that's going to back up Suarez once he does go away. It's not like Griezmann's really that young. I think he's 29. So he's got a few, you know, a maximum of 3 years left at the top. You know, Ter Stegen's probably a good, just under a decade left in him. He's still quite young. But generally speaking, man, that team is old and they've not replaced very well, whereas Real have got a plan B post this core that is currently there, and that's going to really help them. So I think what you're looking at now is a shift in the tide. I don't know if you agree or not, but...
No, I do. Like, Real Madrid's changing of guard, I think, is going to be a lot smoother than, you know, than it was going to be. And I know a lot of people are going to come at me for this, and some people are going to say I'm an absolute lunatic for it, but the biggest blessing and the biggest reason that this change of guard is going to happen as smoothly as it is, the reason why Florentino Perez has gone on this freaking onslaught of just like trying to pick up all the most raw talent possible, you know, young talent all over the world, whether it's in Brazil or in Europe, or I mean, like, I don't know where else, like Kubo's freaking Japanese. Like, yeah, I get he was already in Spain, but he was recently playing in Japan. I mean, just this week, Real Madrid are already linked with another young kid in Ligue 1. And I'll be frank, I won't act like I'm an expert, but I've never even heard of this kid. But
he's very good. I'll tell you that much. He's very good.
Well, there you go. Like, you're someone who's a bit more locked in than me, and he seems to be all the craze. So my point is, Ronaldo's departure is what sparked this. And I think had Ronaldo not left, I personally don't believe that Real Madrid would have taken this project, in the sense of like this Gen Z project, as seriously if he had stuck around, because there was that reliance on him, and it wasn't a bad reliance. I mean, Ronaldo's like one of the best players who's ever going to play the game and to ever live. I mean, he was knocking goals home. He did what needed to be done for Real Madrid to win. But like you said, Barcelona have been dominant over the last decade in league play, and the reason why many fans, or many, you know, people who watch football, especially those who are Real Madrid fans, look at how Champions League they have. Those are two completely different storylines, and I don't think you can compare either one unless you are talking about the teams as a whole. But again, I think it's so hard to talk about playing. How many games does it take to win the Champions League? Like seven? Minus the scores? What is it? Two?
It's a bit more. It's like 13, 14, isn't it, all in, I think.
Well, if you're including the group stage.
Yeah, which is obviously somewhat key, I guess, if you get the second and first place positions. But yeah, they're about, yeah, if you just count knockouts, yeah, about seven, something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so whichever way you want to cut it, the simple fact is winning the Champions League, I'm not saying it's easier, but it's a game, it's a competition where you need to show up on certain days, whereas La Liga is a competition where you have to show up every week.
For 9 months, literally, straight away.
Yeah, and how many games is it? 38 games over the course of the season or something? Yeah, so, I mean, like, people need to give Barcelona credit where it's due. Like, they've absolutely, you know, grabbed La Liga by the throat, and kudos to them. But, again, I agree with you. I think now you're going to see a power shift dynamic. I think Real Madrid have played this very smart since the departure of Ronaldo, picking up certain talent, planning from ahead of time. I mean, and it's not to say that they weren't doing it before Ronaldo was there. Of course, Martin Odegaard, one guy who wants to see out his contract at La Real. I guess he's kind of worried that he'd come into the team and not get as many minutes as he had hoped. And credit to him. Like, do you know how big that is to have a kid who you know wants to return but is saying, no, I want to finish out my loan at Real Sociedad, it shows his commitment to the growth of his game and trying to develop himself as a player, and knowing that he may not get those opportunities right away. I mean, it takes a lot for someone to do that. So the next few years are going to be super interesting. This little Gen Z Nino project that Real Madrid are on, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, I'm excited for the future, but in the present, Real Madrid need to play their next game, which is this Sunday, December 22nd. That's going to be against 7th place Athletic Bilbao. If I'm not mistaken, they are on a 3-game winning streak. So that will be the last game before Real Madrid have it off into winter break, and then you'll have Christmas, the new year, and then a whole new cycle of games to play. Us and I will do a quick, it'll be short, though, little preview match, because this podcast was very long, but there was a lot to dissect. Over the course of the winter break, though, we're trying to come up with some ideas of things to discuss, because there's going to be no football between the 22nd and I think the 3rd of January, or whenever that first game is. So if there is something that you'd like for us to talk about, please let us know on Twitter, at TheRealChampsFS, at TheHasKareem, or at MNizamdin7. So far, we're thinking of doing an analysis of some players who are on loan, taking a look at the future of Real Madrid, and I don't think we have any other ideas just yet. Anyways, I don't think there's anything else to add, but definitely check out this podcast. Please share it with your friends or family or whoever. Leave a review, because that definitely helps the podcast grow. And if you are listening to it, however you're listening to it now, if it's on the native site where this podcast is posted on Spreaker, I want to let you know that it is on a couple more places, such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify now, so you can definitely check it out on there and some other third-party places that aren't used as often, but we will tweet them out so you can take a look, and please share it. Anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening to this very long podcast. I hope you enjoyed the Clasico as much as we did. Looking forward to the next game and hearing from you guys soon. Peace out, and as always, Hala Madrid.